This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The statement went on to reject the proposal because it only focuses on accommodation of politicians and ignores radical reforms needed in South Sudan.
That's VOA's Mohamed Yusuf reporting on a peace proposal rejected by South Sudanese rebels. Details coming up also. Since coming to power as Prime Minister in April, Abiy Mohamed has electrified Ethiopia with his informal style, charisma and energy. And the son of former South African President Jacob Zuma is out on bail after a court appearance today to face charges of corruption. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Abiy Ahmed, the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, has accelerated a radical reform program that is overturning politics in the vast, strategically significant African country. Since coming to power as Prime Minister in April, Abiy has electrified Ethiopia with his informal style, charisma, and energy, earning comparisons to Nelson Mandela. The 42-year-old prime minister so far has freed thousands of political prisoners, reshuffled his cabinet, fired a series of controversial and untouchable civil servants, reached out to hostile neighbors and rivals, lifted bans on websites and other media, ordered the partial privatization of state-owned companies, and ended a state of emergency. To discuss the changes in Ethiopia, we have in studio VOA's Salem Salamon. Welcome, Salem.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start first with the big event of this weekend, peace deal between Eritrea and Ethiopia. What started the animosity between the two countries in the first place?
It's a long time coming, 20 years. In 1998 and 2000, Ethiopia and Eritrea fought a very serious war that cost the lives of thousands of Ethiopians and Eritreans. And at the end of the war, former Prime Minister Meles Zenawi signed an agreement with President Isaias Afwerki of Eritrea in Algiers in 2000, formally ending a two-year deadly conflict between the two countries. So border conflict, colonial borders ended in the lives of loss of lives of thousands of Eritreans and Ethiopians.
So how did this new peace deal come about?
Well, this new peace deal was a surprise to a lot of observers and watchers that watched the conflict that has been staying for 20 years between the two countries. The announcement was made in June. The parliament, the new prime minister, Abiy Ahmed, has made a lot of reforms within Ethiopia, including this announcement to implement the Algiers agreement without any preconditions. And this is not the first time that a prime minister has made this promise. The former also Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn made the same claims, but in terms of implementation, it's been lagging. And so right when this I think Abiy carried more weight for it for some reason, and Eritreans sent delegation a couple weeks ago, and we saw on Sunday the two leaders, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, went into the international airport in Asmara, which was a show of they embraced each other in the international airport. Ethiopian Airlines, for the first time in 20 years, was seen in Asmara's airport, and it was a big gesture that we saw.
It seemed like there was a very positive chemistry between the two leaders.
To be honest with you, I've followed this region for a very long time, and I don't think I've seen the president of Eritrea being very friendly with the prime minister of Ethiopia the way that we witnessed during the weekend, during a state banquet that was prepared. They were making statements, and some of the comments that were coming, I don't know if it's figurative or what it means, but Prime Minister Abiy has been saying that we don't need borders. these are colonial legacies, he said in the past, and that this is a time to build bridges, this is a time to make peace and love. And the same was reciprocated from the Eritrean president, and it was a show of peaceful reforms coming up.
So what do you see, short-term, long-term benefits from this peace deal?
All right. And so what we've seen, the short term, next week, flights are going to start. Ethiopian Airlines is going to fly from Addis Ababa to Asmara. That's the first thing. Ports, and they said, are going to. So because of independence of Eritrea, Ethiopia has become landlocked, not access to the sea. And the only 90% of the trade between trade has been through Djibouti. And so that's the second. And people, Eritrea, and Ethiopians weren't able to use the calling lines. And so that's another effort that we're seeing. So the economic cooperation, we're going to see positive changes. What that means for the border, for the people who live in the border of these countries, we have yet to see. But these are the immediate positive changes that we're noticing.
Maybe any reciprocal move by Eritrea's president, Isaias Afwerki, coming to Addis Ababa for a state visit.
We have yet to see, but one thing that we've noticed from the rhetoric that Isaias was not prepared during the banquet to give a speech, and he said something along the lines of, you know, you saw the reaction of the people of Eritrea. Peace has been in the hearts of the people for a long time. So that kind of reciprocation was already present then. But the sign of declaration of peace to end the war between the two countries is a big move. It's been 20 years in the making, and we're seeing regional changes in that way.
Changes in Eritrea and Ethiopia. VOA Salem Salamon, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
South Sudanese rebels have rejected a peace proposal that, according to the government, had been agreed to by both sides. The news had deflated hopes for an end to South Sudan's nearly five-year civil war. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In a statement issued Monday, the opposition Sudan People's Liberation Movement said a power-sharing agreement was discussed during talks in Uganda, but no formal deal was made. The proposal presented by President Yoweri Museveni was discussed verbally in a cordial environment, read the statement. But there was no official document presented to the chairman and commander-in-chief of the SPLM-SPLA-IO, Dr. Riek Machar. Therefore, the proposal is not official, it said. The statement went on to reject the proposal because it only focuses on accommodation of politicians and ignores radical reforms needed in South Sudan. The South Sudan Opposition Alliance, which consists of nine parties, had earlier rejected the proposal. Kwaje Lasu is a spokesman for the Opposition Alliance. He says such an agreement will fail to address the crisis in South Sudan.
We are not part of it. This is against our belief of inclusivity, of addressing the issues. Above all, this discussion that have taken place in the name of a bridging proposal on governance, it excludes completely the root causes of the crisis.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar held talks Saturday in Uganda's city of Entebbe, a peninsula on Lake Victoria. While a lasting breakthrough was not expected, there were some hopes after recent steps toward peace. The two sides had agreed on Friday to remove troops from cities after a ceasefire deal in late June. James Okuk teaches political science at the University of Juba.
This is an attempt to bridge the gap of trust between them and then to ensure that they can work together again. That was the whole effort in Uganda. So apart from that, there is no real breakthrough regarding the power sharing, because the power sharing also involves those below them, the people around them, the people who are working with them. So they need to benefit from the deal.
Sudan's Foreign Minister Al-Diedri Ahmed said Sunday the two leaders approved a power-sharing agreement that will return Riek Machar from exile and to the vice presidency, although Machar agreed only in principle. It was not clear if the rebels' rejection of that deal scuttled further talks tentatively, set for Khartoum and Kenya. When asked to confirm reports the two leaders were headed to Nairobi this week, Kenyan officials told VOA there was no program scheduled. The latest peace efforts are part of plans to end the civil war that erupted in 2013 after a falling out between the two leaders. The two sides made a similar power-sharing agreement in 2015, but a year later, the deal collapsed and Machar fled the country. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
A power-sharing deal by South Sudan's warring parties appear to be facing new challenges. At a weekend meeting in Uganda, officials say agreement was reached that four vice presidents should be appointed to govern with President Salva Kiir. A tentative deal also was made on a new government structure meant to accommodate the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition and other rebel groups. But the leaders did not sign any binding documents and were given up to tomorrow to present their final position to Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir. Now the rebels are saying they won't sign the deal as is. VOA's Catherine Numbi in Kampala gives us some of the details on the preliminary proposal that now seems to be in limbo.
After close to 10 hours of deliberations, the South Sudan warring parties agreed to about four principles during a meeting hosted by Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni and overseen by Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir. The meeting was a follow-up to earlier talks in Khartoum. Attending were South Sudan President Salva Kiir and his former vice president turned opposition leader Riek Machar. The meeting agreed on returning Machar as one of four vice presidents, who also are to include a woman. Al-Dadri Al-Dekeri is Sudan's foreign affairs minister and was part of the meeting.
It has been agreed that there will be four vice presidents. The current two vice presidents plus His Excellency Dr. Riek Machar will assume the position of first vice president, and then the fourth position will be allocated to a woman from the opposition.
Al-Dekeri said the parties also agreed to increase the numbers of parliament members and cabinet ministers to accommodate all opposition parties.
It has been agreed that the current national legislature of 400 will be topped by 150. That shall be shared by SPLM-IO 100 and the opposition 50. Likewise, the current executive of 30 will be topped by 15 members. Those 15 members will be shared also by SPLM-IO, which will take 10, and the other 5 will go to the opposition.
He says a deadline was set for tomorrow to finalize the agreed principles.
Whereas the government had accepted the proposal presented by His Excellency President Bashir and President Museveni, the SPLM-IO and other opposition groups said they, in principle, are ready to consider that proposal and come up with their final position. The negotiations will continue in Khartoum up to the 10th of July. Hopefully, by that point of time, we will arrive at a final agreement on all of the issues.
The ongoing peace talks are part of the regional efforts to restore peace in Africa's youngest nation. The leaders are to meet next in Nairobi. South Sudan descended into civil war in late 2013, and the conflict has created one of the fastest growing refugee crises in the world. This is Catherine Numbi for VOA News in Kampala.
Nineteen past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. In a World Cup packed with upsets and last-minute heroics, only one thing is certain: a European team will be the winner. Gone are South America, Africa, and Asia, along with defending champion Germany and pre-tournament favorite Brazil. That leaves France against Belgium tomorrow and England against Croatia Wednesday in the semi-finals. The French rely on youth, particularly Kylian Mbappe, who has scored 3 goals. The older Belgians hope their experience will make the difference. Another motivation is some of their players players are unlikely to be back in 4 years. The other semi-final pits England against surprise Croatia. England has blown out Croatia the last two times they've played by a combined score of 9-2. The difference may be whether Croatian goalkeeper Danijel Subacic has recovered from what appears to be a hamstring injury Saturday. For more details on World Cup action, be sure to stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. A group of Central African Republic refugees is using music to urge the world to save their country from misery and stop the conflict so they can return home. On the streets of Cameroon's northern town of Garoua, they also asked their host country, Cameroon, to push for peace. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Garoua, northern Cameroon.
These are the voices of five refugees from the Central African Republic singing in Garoua, northern Cameroon, for peace to return to their troubled country. They sing every weekend along the streets and in front of churches and mosques, urging people in conflict to talk and not fall into the same situation as their country. 27-year-old Puchi Uben is the group leader. He says they fled from their city, Alindao, when armed groups attacked, killing several people and looting cattle, farm produce and cash. He says they ended up in Cameroon at a United Nations-run refugee camp in the village of Mbaimbum. After sharing their stories, they thought more people should know about their experience, so they created a singing group called Peace Crusaders.
On chantait pour les orphelins en français, Sango Lingala.
Uben says they decided to sing in French as well as Sango, Fufude and Lingala languages spoken in several parts of Africa so that all people should know that peace is priceless. He says they sing for children who have lost their parents in wars around the African continent. The Central African Republic has been in conflict since 2013 when the Seleka, a coalition of rebels from a predominantly Muslim region, forced President François Bozize from office. Violence between armed Christians and Muslim groups has forced more than a million people from their homes. Uben says he had experience singing in the Catholic Church choir group. The church was destroyed before he fled to Cameroon. In a song titled We Want Peace, the group questions why weapons are used as solutions to crisis when history teaches the world that after every conflict, people still sit at the negotiating table to sort out their differences. 27-year-old Dende Claudette is the lead singer and joined the group 2 years ago. She lost her grandmother in the war and is still hoping that one day she will see her three sisters who were lost in the conflict. She says her heart bleeds because she has seen many people being killed and stray bullets taking the lives of those fleeing the carnage. She says parents watched helplessly as their children were slaughtered in front of them and armed men stole their money. Some mothers were not able to bury their children because they had to flee for their lives. The refugee singers have opened a clothing repair shop in Garoua to earn a living and receive donations from well-wishers. They say they will keep singing until there is peace in the CAR. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Garoua, Cameroon.
The son of former South African President Jacob Zuma is out on bail after a court appearance today to face charges of corruption. Dudazani Zuma was led into a Johannesburg courtroom in leg shackles to hear the charges. He was released on $7,500 bail and his case was postponed until January. Zuma was arrested last Thursday as he returned to the country to attend his brother's funeral. Visu Nlakanipo Zuma, the former president's youngest son, who died of an illness on July 1st. Zuma has been charged in connection with a case involving Makabisi Jonas, a former deputy prime minister. Jonas has told prosecutors that he was offered the post of finance minister by the powerful Gupta family, who have been accused of influencing former President Zuma in his cabinet appointments. The elder Zuma was forced to resign in February by his African National Congress after being implicated in numerous corruption scandals. Barely a month before Zimbabweans go to the polls on July 30th, many voters are worried that the ruling party is using the personal details they used to register to vote to canvass for votes. Reporter Kuzadze Nawash has more details.
Daniel Chigudu is a Zimbabwean journalist. He is among the people who have been receiving the unsolicited text messages canvassing for votes.
The message is purported to be coming from maybe President Emmerson Mnangagwa because it's ZANU-PF, and he's saying he's asking for my vote for president, and also he's asking me to vote for Fanny Piri for MP in Kaduma Central.
Many people have expressed their outrage, while others say that spam messages from various service providers is nothing new. Munyaradzi Dodo, the editor of an online publication covering politics called Open Pali, says this is different.
These ones are specific. They are saying your name. They are targeting individuals. It's like user specific. This is no different from the Cambridge Analytica story that happened in the USA where people were being targeted by these social networks.
Dodo says the messages may get more aggressive and give the impression that ZANU-PF has the voters' details. Those who have been exposed to ZANU-PF violence in the past may feel inclined to vote for ZANU-PF. Chigudu shares those worries. He notes the messages started even though the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, known as ZEC, said it was protecting voter information.
So the shocking part is, how did ZANU-PF or the person who sent this message got my number and also the constituents where I am voting? So then it begins to raise a lot of questions, especially when ZEC says we will not release a voter's roll with photographs because we are trying to protect the voters. And then all of a sudden we are receiving such kind of message. Then we ask, how are we protected?
Speaking at a press conference Monday, ZEC Commissioner Kubani Moyo suggested the information was from mobile service providers.
In this case, no one accessed your information via the database of the commission. We are protecting the privacy of the voters. That information is straight from the service providers, and we would like the media to assist us talk to the public that they were not responsible for that.
After a heated interaction at the press conference, ZEC chairwoman Justice Priscilla Chigumba promised action.
What I will say in our defense is that we will investigate, because what we're doing in this room right now is everyone is speculating. We will investigate and find out where the source of this data came from.
While ZEC has said the voters' roll database is their responsibility, Chigumba hinted that they are not the only ones who had access to the data. She noted that when people registered to vote, they could check if their details were properly captured through a USSD code, which allows cell providers to communicate with users. For VOA, this is Kudzais Nawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.